Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to episode 8 of season 1 of True Crime Tuesday. What a week we've had. Obviously, we've had a couple of weeks of what I can only say is a legal process, because it would appear, well, not appear, it actually took place. Somebody got in touch legally and asked us not to release a certain episode until they'd reviewed it. And as bizarre as that sounds, it's completely above board and legit. I am allowed to say this. I've checked with my solicitor. I had to pay for a solicitor to check over this information and also to run what I'm putting out by him for at least the next 3 weeks. Or pretty much until the end of this season, where we're covering what has been dubbed the Marconi Murders. Now, I've been podcasting for about 7 years, and in all that time, only once have I received any sort of legal challenge, if you will, and that was from an individual, and it didn't go through the legal system. This is very out of the ordinary. And here's an interesting thing which might be coincidental, but now and again I do check on LinkedIn the Who's Viewed My Profile section, and it'll give you maybe 5 actual profiles you can click on, and the rest are greyed out unless you pay, say, £400 a year or whatever it is. And I don't, because I don't really use LinkedIn. But I do check this to see, you know, what people from what areas have been viewing my profile. And it's usually podcaster at, or audio person at, etc., or somebody within the entertainment field. When I checked it this week, I have military officer at the UK Home Office, I have IT specialist at BT, I have someone in the defence industry, and I have someone at Armed Forces, open brackets, unspecified, closed brackets. And when I say someone, I mean that's all the information I have. It literally says someone. Now, I check that, as people do, people are interested in what people are viewing about them, maybe once a month. This is the first time in history of me having LinkedIn, which is about 5 years, that anyone from the military or the defence sector have viewed my profile. Now, is that a coincidence, or does it tie in nicely with this drop of a legal challenge about the output of the programme? Now, we've talked on this show about how some things may be coincidental, but also maybe not. I never thought I'd find myself in one of those quandaries where you're asking yourself, is what's happening to me a coincidence, or is it something else? And given what we're talking about over these 10 episodes, I really hope it's a coincidence. One thing this has all led to, well, two things this has all led to, is firstly, it's now led to that situation having to dictate the next three episodes, including this one. Because this episode was meant to be called The Trouble with Electricity. And the reason for that would have become evident. However, that particular episode, whoever these people are, want to keep hold of it a touch longer. So I'm basically recording these episodes, sending them to my solicitor, and they are then sending them back to me at a time they seem to pick out of the air, and then I'm allowed to air them. So it means that the next three episodes, including this one, will come out much later than I wanted. Especially for our Patreons, everyone else should hopefully have them on time on Tuesday. But it does mean that this episode is not going to be The Trouble with Electricity, and instead, an ad hoc episode of The Trouble with Cars Part 3, which I didn't think we would go into, but it turns out there's a plethora of information regarding cars, again, to do with these alleged, and I need to reiterate that word, alleged Marconi murders. So if all goes well in my mind anyway, then next week we should have what should have been episode 8 will be episode 9, The Trouble with Electricity, and then we will do a roundup and a general overall look at the entirety of this whole idea in our final episode, episode 10. We will then have a break for two Tuesdays, and we will return with season 2. Now, on season 2, I've given this a lot of thought, because I do now like the idea of a continuing narrative throughout a season. And I'm sure certain seasons we will look at individual cases. But for next season, I've decided to kind of poke the bear, so to speak, because all of next season, we will be looking at what's known as false flag experiences. If you're unaware of the term false flag, we've used one of them as an example in this season, when we talked about the sinking of the Lusitania. To jog your memory, this was the situation which happened in real life where the UK received information that an American cruise liner full of nothing but the general public was going to inadvertently be moving through U-boat-infested waters. And in the Liverpool Museum, there's literally a telegram correspondence between the person who spotted this error and the UK government. And they say, should we warn the Americans they're about to be torpedoed? And the UK basically say, no, because if that ship sinks, it will sway American opinion in favour of joining the war effort. And therefore, the UK government decided to go along with the old adage for the greater good and decided, if these people die, we get more help in the war. And so they allowed these poor souls to perish. But in the world of governmental false flag operations, that is the tip of the iceberg. So next season will be called Truth and Consequences. Because we're going to take a look in each episode at genuinely proved historical false flags where a government has allowed, or at the very least suggested as a serious suggestion for consideration, attacking their own people or doing experiments on their own people without public knowledge in order to further an idea or to generate some sort of support in favour of what they want their outcome to be. And before anybody suggests, well, this is just a conspiracy show, it's nothing about crime, it is about crime. We're not going to cover any conspiratorial aspects. We may offshoot to suggest a few conspiracies surrounding factual events, but next season will all be factual, historical, documented events. And you may well think, well, where does the crime come into it? Well, this is the interesting part, because it would appear from doing slight research for season two that if you're the rule makers, you're the lawmakers, you can sign a bill that allows you, the government, to commit crime and not face any consequences. The Security Services Act of 1989 was a bit stricter than the one that preceded it. But even in 2019, this act was challenged by a liberties group, who stated you are basically allowing murderers, torturers to roam free. However, when they tried to challenge the act, only two out of the five casting votes voted for changing the act, meaning it still stands today. According to The Guardian, after the hearing, Ben Jaffrey, QC, representing the Coalition of Civil Liberty Groups, said the policy, in effect, meant that MI5 was granting immunity to its agents. He pointed out that even the police had recently recommended that more than 20 people, including high-ranking senior officials, should be prosecuted for murder, kidnap, torture, and perverting the court of justice following an investigation by Operation Canova, an operation which looked into the MI5 agents' handling inside the IRA during Northern Ireland's troubles. Were any of those people brought to justice? No. The reason being, these three people out of five voted it entirely legal, under the right circumstance, if it's protecting the nation's interest, to murder, torture, kidnap, etc. But that defining term, in the nation's interest, is one which seems very flexible indeed, as flexible as a rubber band. You'll recall we mentioned a journalist who was found hung in a sexually erotic act, as they like to say, after he went over to Chile to investigate why the UK government had signed off on the very, very down low the purchase of UK helicopter weaponry being fitted to refurbished helicopters in Chile for sale to Iraq during the Iraq War. Now, when you suicide someone, as is the premise of this entire season, and you do so because if that comes out, it tarnishes the reputation of the government, how is that in the interests of the nation? That nation needs to know you're arming our own enemies. But they didn't want you to know. But given what's been happening of late, I'll caveat that by saying, in my opinion. My point being, I think we can all agree as morally good humans that murder, kidnap, torture, abuse are all crimes. If your head of state declares they're no longer crimes for certain individuals, then something's inherently wrong with the system, and they are still crimes. Therefore, anyone asking why next season, Truth and Consequence, where we look at the suggestions or the activities carried out by governments for allegedly your greater good, will fall under what we, as a collective human race, term a crime. So, following episode 10, we will take a 2-Tuesday break whilst we prepare for season 2. But right now, a huge thank you to everyone who's joined us on Patreon. Thank you very much. Head over to patreon.com/crimetuesday and you will receive these episodes early and ad-free. And bi-weekly, we will do a Patreon-only episode called Cold Case, where we take a look at some of the most famous cold cases in history. So currently, we already have over double figures in that back catalogue for you to go and binge. And we've covered everything back from the Black Dahlia murder right through to Biggie Smalls. So if that sounds like your cup of tea, so to speak, head over to patreon.com/crimetuesday. But right now, we're going to return, finally, to the topic at hand, the alleged dubbed Marconi murders. And for anyone joining at this point, I strongly suggest you go back and start at episode 1 and you will get the picture of where we're up to right now. Because today we're going to look, surprisingly, at a third installment of The Trouble with Cars. Next week, fingers crossed, I'll bring to you The Trouble with Electricity. And then we will round things off nicely with episode 10, our season finale. But after the break, we're going to be back with The Trouble with Cars, part 3. And so we've already looked at several issues with cars. And when I say issues, I don't necessarily mean with a vehicle. I mean with what a hidden someone has potentially done to the car, or indeed to the individual who owns the car, to make it look like a suicide. But none of these are your everyday suicides. We're talking about people who fill their car full of gas canisters and hit a wall head first with no attempt to brake. We're talking about people who have managed to somehow climb under a car, bend your neck at an almost impossible angle to wrap your mouth around the exhaust pipe. Yet, when even the coroner says there are not enough emissions on the walls or garage doors to warrant death by that type of method, they will still put either suicide, misadventure, or open verdict on that death certificate. But let's jump right back to April 1987 and the peak of the deaths of these scientists. We're going to take a look at Stuart Gooding. Now, Stuart was a 23-year-old postgrad research student at, once again, the Royal Military College for Science. He met an untimely and enigmatic end in April of that year, and his death occurred under circumstances that would on the surface seem straightforward. A car wreck in Cyprus. However, when we consider the context, it raises more questions than answers. You see, at the time of his death, his college was engaged in military exercises on the island. Now, when we reach our finale episode, we're going to take a bit of a look at this Royal Military College of Science, because an awful lot of the deaths seem to spring from this particular area. So, is it feasible that somebody who works within that collegiate building, so to speak, is now in Cyprus at this time and he knows what job he has to do, i.e. tinker with Stuart's car so it loses its power, or for example, he snips the brake cords and Stuart has an uncontrollable crash causing his death? Maybe. Was Stuart drunk driving? No, that was not proven in any of the coroner's report. He apparently died due to the impact when his car hit a lorry head on. The lorry driver was unharmed in that accident, yet it proved fatal enough to kill Stuart outright. Also, in Cyprus, they drive on the left-hand side of the road, like we do in England. So, given it was a two-way street, Stuart, who apparently was a great driver by all accounts, would not only be perfectly used.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month?
They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster.
That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club.
don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
To driving on his side of the road, so to speak, he would have no reason and also be aware of the utter fatal consequences of suddenly veering into the opposite lane. Yet, that's what he apparently did. Coincidentally, just at the perfect time on this almost isolated mountain road that an articulated lorry was heading the other way. Now that is a bit beyond chance, unless he did, as we've not ruled out at any point of any episode, just decide that was the right moment to kill himself. But just like all our other victims, he showed no signs of suicidal ideation, never left a note, gave no reason for this apparent misswerve, if you will, directly into an oncoming truck. Are we stretching the credulity of possibility to state that these amended vehicles that could be automated from someone staying... Are we stretching credulity too far to suggest that each of these vehicle deaths, the impact deaths, all had something in common, and that commonality was an automated car, i.e. one that the individual could drive, think it was completely normal, and then someone sitting a mile away could use a remote control device to control the car? Because I don't think we are stretching the credulity with that idea. I believe way back in the 87-88 era, the ability to automate a car not only already existed, it was already being put to use. Don't forget, this entire narrative is wrapped around the SDI, the Strategic Defense Initiative, where they're talking about controlling things via automation in space. So if you can do it in space, I'm pretty sure you can do it from a few hundred feet away. And it's not beyond possibility somebody could watch this basically isolated road and choose just the right time to press swerve or to hit left on a joystick or whatever it was that may have happened. Accidental death. That's what the coroner concluded. But how often do we see these accidents occur under the cloak of military activity? So, is it that there's something more behind this official narrative? Well, at the start of this episode, we discussed once more the fact that the Secret Service has carte blanche to carry out basically any crime they deem within the nation's security. Now, what possible thing under the nation's security could this young man have been working on that required the abrupt and untimely silencing of a bright young mind? It's certainly food for thought. Then we have George Kuntis, a seasoned systems analyst at British Polytechnic. And he met a tragic and mysterious end in that very same month, April 1987. Kuntis was known for his expertise and his analytical mind. Yet he drowned after his BMW plunged into the Mersey River. The official records classify his death as misadventure. The circumstances surrounding this incident, though, do leave more questions than answers. Because here we have George Kuntis, a highly skilled systems analyst. Not someone you'd put together with careless decisions. And yet, somehow, his car ends up in the River Mersey. An accident? Maybe. But there's not a road that runs alongside it. And with someone like Kuntis, who deals in systems and precision, the word misadventure, well, it feels inadequate, doesn't it? The coroner's verdict of misadventure would suggest that Kuntis' death was the result of an unfortunate accident. But we need to ask, how does a man of his caliber, driving a BMW, a vehicle that was known for its safety and control, find himself in a river? Was it simply a momentary lapse, or was there more at play? Well, as anybody knows who's seen the River Mersey, you can't really just drive into it. You need to find a specific location to find somewhere to get a car through. Yes, I'm talking in 2024, and long ago in 1987, there possibly wouldn't have been that many barriers, but there also wasn't a road that runs directly alongside it that you could accidentally slip off and into. Basically, what I'm saying is, if a car ends up in the River Mersey, it's intended to end up in the River Mersey. If it was an accident, which to me seems highly unlikely, personally, in my opinion, it would seem highly paradoxical that someone who spent his life working with logic and systems would end his life in such an illogical and chaotic way. So was there something or someone pushing him off course? The official narrative closes this case with a simple explanation. Like many of the stories before, but the simplicity doesn't satisfy anyone who looks closer. Again, Kuntis had no suicidal ideation, no depression, and it's almost as if when these deaths occur, somebody looks through that sort of medical mental history, and if there are no signs, then the death is labelled misadventure. Because the more you think about it, the word misadventure starts to feel like a very convenient label. It stops you from asking the harder questions. And adventure. The word in itself doesn't imply what went on. It's not indicative of the truth. And by that, I do not mean be it a controlled murder or suicide. Misadventure implies he was maybe speeding up and slowing down to see if he could break in time to not go into the river. That was his adventure, and he misjudged it, and he died by misadventure. But that's not the case. Again, it's almost, and again, if we're looking solely through the lens of this being a murderous scenario, and we are only playing devil's advocate here, misadventure is a wonderful word game where when you read that in the press, you assume, what a fool. For example, if you read that somebody's been out drinking and they've jumped into a river to swim, they will have a death labelled misadventure. And that kind of makes sense, but you still think, what a fool. It's an interesting sort of feeling it gives you to read somebody's died through misadventure. And it most definitely does not sum up what happened to this guy. But let's move into the next month. Yes, month of May 1987. Michael Baker, a 22-year-old digital communications expert at Plessy Defense Systems. Now, if you look, Plessy and Marconi are almost intricately linked, specifically in the communications industry. Now, Michael met his sudden and tragic end when his BMW inexplicably crashed through a barrier and resulted in his death. What was the verdict of the coroner? I'll let you guess. It starts with an M and it ends in adventure. But let's take a pause here because we're not talking about any young man. Michael Baker was a digital communications expert in a highly sensitive industry, Plessy Defense Systems. This was someone who understood the complexities of secure communication, the kind of person who deals in precision and detail, not the kind of man that accidentally crashes through a road barrier. It definitely feels like there's more to this than meets the eye. Of course, the coroner ruling misadventure suggests an unfortunate accident, but it leaves a gnawing sense of incompleteness. Baker's BMW, yes, another BMW. I mean, was this particular make of car easier to manipulate than most? Could it be that Baker was not entirely in control of his vehicle? And if so, was it just like Stuart Gooding? Now, when you're dealing with theories like this, you will have everyone who will say, well, there's patterns everywhere if you look long enough. But it's hard to ignore the pattern here. Young, talented professionals working in the defense and technology industry, meeting untimely and mysterious deaths. That's all coincidence? I'm not so sure. Or is there something or someone else that's creating these misadventures? Baker's death fits into a troubling timeline of these incidents of that era. Young professionals, all in the defense sector, meeting untimely ends with very questionable circumstances. And for me, this term, misadventure, whenever I see it now, it doesn't close the case as, I believe, some people want it to do. For me, anytime I see it in any death, it makes me want to look deeper into what took place. So it's had the adverse effect. And finally, we have another car-related death that ideally should have been within The Problem with Cars Part 2. Because yet again, a year later, March 1988, we have Trevor Knight, a 52-year-old computer engineer from Marconi Space and Defense Systems, found dead in its garage in what appeared to be a tragic case of suicide. Discovered in his car, parked in his garage, having attached a hose pipe to the exhaust. The coroner's verdict, undoubtedly suicide. But consider the context. Another senior computer engineer working in a highly sensitive defense sector. So was Knight's death a desperate act of suicide? Or did the previous assassins who'd done this in this theory just get it right? Make it appear like an actual suicide with no questions to be asked. And this isn't just about one man's death. It's about a series of the events we've covered so far that when we look at together, paint a picture that's far more disturbing than any single case. Well, we've yet to discover, thanks to what's going on, the disturbing parts of episode 9 now, our penultimate episode, The Trouble with Electricity, which, fingers crossed, will be with you next week. Of course, there's no direct evidence to conclusively prove that these deaths were murders. Though find me a person who thinks the pattern of fatalities amongst these professionals connected to defense work during this period is not deeply unsettling, and I'll show you a liar. The fact so many individuals with ties to sensitive and potentially world-altering projects died in such a short span and under such mysterious circumstance screams that this is not just mere coincidence. Whether these deaths were orchestrated by the Soviet Union, rogue elements within Western governments, or other shadowy forces remains an ever-open question. However, the possibility that they were part of a coordinated effort to disrupt the SDI or other secretive projects is, in my personal opinion, a theory that deserves the most serious consideration. Given the high stakes of the powerful interests involved, my guess, my theory, my opinion, is that these deaths are the result of a dark, hidden hand working to shape the course of history from the shadows. And if you think for one moment, well, that whole government manipulation of the general public, that was then and this is now. Here's an interesting little fact that seems to have passed quite a few people by. 8 European countries have either reintroduced or are seriously considering the reintroduction of compulsory national service since the onset of the Russia-Ukraine conflict in February 2022. These include Latvia, Lithuania, Sweden, Germany, France, Romania, Poland, and it was part of Rishi Sunak's manifesto to keep the Conservatives in power this year. Now, I'm not saying that that's preparation for a global conflict, but the idea of Chekhov's gun is. The idea you don't bring a loaded weapon into scene one of a play if it's never going to be used. I'm also saying if there is such a global conflict, it would merely be coincidental, of course, that it happens just as the BRICS coalition of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa are almost finished on an agreement to stop using the US dollar to trade oil, thereby removing the so-called petrodollar and wiping untold millions, maybe billions, from the US economy. And if you look through history and check what comes before every global conflict, well, it's a cost of living rise, inflation rises, and war makes money. It's a racket, and it's been called so for a good reason. Why are the alleged allies on our list of Marconi suspects? Because war is good. War creates wealth. And of course, if Reagan's SDI goes ahead, it removes any chance of a nuclear threat. Therefore, a country can't feel threatened enough to go to war. And war, in the eyes of this upper government, if you will, is seen as man's answer to a plague. It's man's answer to reset the global economy in their favour. Allegedly. Until next week, stay safe and take care.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month?
They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster.
That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.